Ways and Means Subcommittee on Human Services. May 28th already. This is the work session for the State Commission on Children and Families. The Senate Democrats have had a caucus, but we understand they're on their way, so we will have a quorum soon. And it is the intent of to work session these grant applications and to send them out today. The first request is a federal grant application on the positive youth development, and we have with us Donald Middleton, the State Commission on Children and Families, and Connie Carley, and Linda Ames is with us from the Department of Administrative Services, and we have our own Sheila Baker from Legislative Fiscal Office. And with that, Ms. Baker.
Madam Chair.
Oh, and we have Rosie and Rosette. For those of you who have never met Rosie and Rosette, Rosie and Rosette are there to remind us of the use or not to use acronyms, because when we do use acronyms, they like the contribution. And the contributions at the end of session will go to the Oregon Food Bank to feed those who are less fortunate than us. So with that, let's begin.
Madam Chair, and I'll, as you noted, we have four grants before us today to work session. The first one from the Commission on Children and Families is basically a continuation of a grant that they have already been working on. But because the focus has shifted a little bit, we felt that it would be reasonable to bring it back for legislative review. And so I'll have the agency present their information.
Good afternoon. My name is Donna Middleton. I'm the director of the State Commission on Children and Families. With me today is Connie Carley, who coordinates our positive youth development effort. And so I'm going to have Connie do most of the conversation with you, but I wanted to give you just a little overview of positive youth development. As I spoke yesterday to you, one of the priorities that we have is developing positive opportunities for youth in communities. One of the things that we find in most places is that we work on the deficit model, which is what did you do wrong? What's the problem? And what we're trying to do in positive youth development is work on the strengths of our youth and communities, provide them with positive opportunities to be part of the community, to engage in working as volunteers, to engage in working with agencies, to be parts of committees, to hear their advice, and to be supportive of their efforts in a much more positive way. And so we applied 5 years ago now for this grant and received it. And Connie has been working much of the time on promoting positive youth development opportunities for communities and at the state level. So I'm going to have her talk a little bit about the current grant and the opportunities for future grant money.
Good afternoon. Again, I'm Connie Carley. And I wanted just to take a few minutes to discuss the purpose of the first five-year grant. It was to work with state and local partners to develop policies and strategies to promote the positive youth development approach in the youth service system. During our first 5 years, we were able to provide training for youth and adults on the principles of positive youth development for 3,500 individuals. We also were able to provide many grants to local communities for girls 9 to 14. And that grant was particularly identified for Oregon. We were one of the only states that received an additional small grant to encourage communities to work with girls 9 to 14 years old, primarily those that were isolated or in at-risk situations, and to encourage collaborations among agencies working with girls to really support young girls in that age group. And so we selected five counties, Baker, Coos, Curry, Clatsop, and Grant County were the pilot sites, and we've gotten some really positive outcomes from those many grants. We also supported a conference that focused on leadership and advocacy.
Excuse me. What was the Baker, Coos, Curry, Clatsop, and what was the other one?
Curry.
Grant.
Grant.
Grant?
Yes.
Thank you.
Because folks felt that a lot of the rural communities didn't have a lot of resources for girls, so we wanted to help support that effort there. Also, we supported a statewide conference that pulled together 13 girls from across the state to meet and get some information on leadership training and advocacy, as well as resources, and help them go back to their local communities to get involved in their local communities around issues facing young girls. Also, we were pleased that 22 out of 36 counties identified positive youth development strategies as priorities to address outcomes for youth in their communities. So we were pleased to see as communities were doing their planning, they were also looking at positive youth development strategies. And one of the goals of the first grant was to also work with state partners around looking at their policies and practices to promote positive youth development, and I'm pleased to say that there's four key state agencies that have either incorporated practices or policies that promotes positive youth development. So that was some of our major accomplishments of the first round of the grant. Now, this grant...
Could you elaborate a little of the collaboration and what's done with respect to DHS and I've said my acronym, Department of Human Services, Independent Living Program?
The Independent Living Program has been a partner with us since the very beginning, and what they've done is we've collaborated in providing positive youth development training to local service providers in the community. So their providers, foster parents, young people themselves in that system, to encourage them to take a youth development approach in providing services and connecting their young people to various opportunities and within their communities, so they become more connected to the activities and services that supports young people. So that's how we work with them. We just finished completing a two-day positive youth development training with, again, service providers as well as state agencies around positive youth development. So that was a joint project that we did with them. And they also included youth development strategies in their national state plan. Other questions? Okay. This next grant is intended to continue some of the efforts that we've started on the state level, but also the intent of this grant is to move this work down into a local pilot site that will be a collaborative effort among community partners as well as the state partners to really increase opportunities for young people to be involved in a variety of activities that will help them become successful, as well as increase opportunities for them to participate in activities where they can have positive self-expression as well as civic engagement and participation in their community. We believe the difference between youth development and other approaches is that we're really encouraging agencies to actively engage young people in the services they provide, their planning, evaluation, the monitoring, and not just have them as recipients, but actual partners in the programs that they are receiving at the local level. So this grant is intended to actually identify a pilot site that will be monitored and evaluated throughout the 4 years of the grant. The first year is a planning phase, and the second is actually implementing it.
Have you selected the
site? No, we have not. That's part of our would be part of our requirement for the first year to identify the site, or actually the first 3 months of the new year.
Any questions? Reverend Smith.
Thank you. It says the grant requires a 10% match, which is down from 40% from last time, which is great. I don't know why they're so generous, but that's okay. But.
Well, the reason they're generous is because all 13 states went back in February at our annual meeting and expressed that they're in financial crisis in their
good.
States. So as a partner, I think that's their way of trying to help us out.
And it sounds to me like the match this time your match of the position will more than qualify you for the 10%. And that's okay, because I am assuming that you need a location and a computer and that type of
right.
stuff. Yeah. Okay. And so that one position is going to cover it. Okay. How much of this money is flow through down to the local level?
We're still in the process of finalizing the budget, but we will have a planning group, or we have a planning group that's working on the grant right now, and we want to work with them to determine how much we should flow down. But I assume at least 40% to 50% would probably go down to the local community, because we want to make sure they have enough that they can do their planning and implement some of their strategies. From the federal perspective, they would hope that locally communities would come together to build upon the seed money that we're providing for their work at the local level to do that piece.
Follow-up. And then on the last page, it says, if awarded, the first year you get $120,000, and then $250,000 in each of the years. Why do they do that?
Because the first year is really focusing on planning.
I see. Okay. But this is a continuing grant. You've already done the planning, haven't you?
No. This is for the planning for the pilot site locally.
Yeah, I am misunderstood. Okay. Thank you.
Continue.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, I'm Linda Ames with Budget and Management, and we recommend approval of the request.
Legislative Fiscal.
Madam Chair, we also recommend approval. We'd note that at the point, assuming that the agency gets the grant, they will come back to the emergency board for federal funds expenditure limitation, and if they need to continue the position authority, because there's some, the position was originally funded, it's going away in effect in the governor's budget now. This would bring it back with the funding, so they would need to come to the emergency board to do that, but we do recommend approval of the request.
Okay. We need Senator, and I understood they were on their way. Could you check and see? We'll go ahead and move on to the next grant while we wait for the two senators, and then come back to since I said work session. We're now in work session on Department of Human Services, Children, Adult, and Family Services, federal grant application request with Employment Retention and Advancement, and Mr. Jim Neely's with us today. And Pam, welcome.
Good afternoon.
And we have our own Ms. Sheila Baker. Okay. Still here? Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Jim Neely, Deputy Director, Department of Human Services. And today we're asking for approval retroactively to apply for a grant from the Department of Labor, which, frankly, we didn't anticipate. About 3 years ago, we came to you and asked permission to apply for a small administrative grant from Health and Human Services for the Employment Retention Initiative. And the administrative grant was simply to provide for a tracking system for research to look at ways that we could help our folks moving from welfare to work to find better ways to stabilize their employment and advance from their initial job into a better job. And the actual process by which they did that was funded through the existing jobs program. About 3 or 4 months ago, we contacted the Manpower Demonstration Research Corporation, who is doing the research with the federal government on this employment retention and advancement grant, and said it looked like we would not be continuing this research in the coming biennium because of cutbacks that we had seen in the jobs program. And so they talked with Health and Human Services, who said we have seen from the initial results in the three sites, and that's Eugene, Medford, and Salem, some very promising practices here. We'd really like you to continue this. What if we found the program dollars for you to do that with? And they've never made that offer before, so we said, well, if you can find them, we'll certainly talk to you about that. And a few weeks ago, I got a call from HHS saying, well, it looks like Department of Labor is ready to give you $1 million in program funds to keep those three sites going for the 03-05 biennium. And they were very excited to be able to give us program dollars, and I said we'd love to take them. So this is a request to be able to apply retroactively for those program grants and see if we can further advance our knowledge of how to keep folks moving from welfare to work better without additional cost to the state.
Right. Is this, Jim, a part of our Oregon's pioneering effort on welfare to work?
Madam Chair,
one of the first states?
Yes, it is. I think because we were one of the first states really to do welfare reform, we were one of the first states to grapple with, well, you got the first job, how do you keep that job, and then how do you advance from that job? And so they were, I think they were very anxious to get us into the study and now very anxious for us to stay there because it looks like we found some both pre-employment and post-employment methodologies that help folks do that.
Were there any other states that are also conducting this kind of research and analysis?
Madam Chair, there are other states in the study. There are no other states that Department of Labor has offered to actually pay for the
really?
Program costs. We are the first and only.
That says a lot. Any questions?
I think you've covered the retroactivity. I just have to bring it up because you were kind of had something thrown at you in left field.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, when I first heard that they would be likely willing to do this for us, it sounded as though there would be rather a lengthy process. A few days later, I got a call back saying, well, by the way, we have to commit that money by the end of the week. Can we have your application? So, indeed, it was a surprise in terms of the speed.
Well, those surprises aren't such a bad thing, are they, Madam Chair?
No, particularly if Department of Labor, because they would be looking at it from the standpoint of the results of what we're doing and looking how they can roll something out nationwide. I mean, they're, you know, that's why when you said that they gave you a call and said we wanted to continue the study and analysis in Oregon, and normally a federal agency doesn't do that that quickly unless they're looking for something that they can think that's applicable to nationwide. So that's very encouraging and very pleased that they would think that that what we're doing in Oregon merits additional time and study for potential nationwide application. So I Pam,
Madam
any Chair. Additional questions, by the way? Do you have a question?
Yes.
Senator Morris.
Thank you. The allocation to the three essentially contractors providing services equals $1 million. The program funding within DHS that comes from existing TANF funds?
Madam Chair, Senator Morris, those contractors are the ones that are currently under contract for our jobs program, and this is just an additional new $1 million that will take the place of those TANF funds, and those TANF funds will be used for other jobs program activities.
Okay, rephrase my question, Madam Chair.
Senator Morris.
What would be the administrative costs within DHS, if any?
Madam Chair, Senator Morse, there's no additional administrative costs. We're already operating jobs programs in all areas of the state. This really just adds another $1 million in terms of the service directly to the contractor to do that. We're not taking any administrative money off the top.
Okay. Thank you.
Pam.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, I'm Pam Teschner with the Department of Administrative Services, and we recommend that you approve this request.
Ms. Baker.
Legislative Fiscal Office also recommends approval. If the grant is awarded, which it looks like it will be, the department would come back in, and in a budget rebalance plan or other emergency board request, we'd build that money into their 0305 budget.
Moving on. Thank you very much. And Jim's been involved with Welfare to Work since its inception.
Forever.
He's not here.
Do you want
to take a recess? Well, why don't we? Barry isn't here yet, so we'll take a little recess until the other members arrive, and we get our other LFO person back. She's out looking for the other Senate members. And then we will go to the genetic program and the population-based birth defects. And we've heard the birth defects before and asked the agency to come back and provide us with a lot more detail than when they were here last time. So we'll stand at ease for until the other members return. Work session on the grant application request for positive youth development. And if you have any questions of Ms. Carley, Connie Carley is here, who is the director for that particular grant, would be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
I just kind of looked over this. I get excited seeing kids in leadership anyway, so positive youth development is something that I would have a mandate to just strive toward.
Would you like to make a motion?
Madam Chair, I'd like to move that the grant for positive youth development, I think is the name of it, the application for such be moved.
Senator Carter moves the application request for the positive youth development by the State Commission on Children and Families to the full recommend to the full committee on Ways and Means. Is there any objection? Carrier. Craig. Work session on the Department of Human Services, Children as Children Belt Services federal grant application request for employment retention and advancement. Jim Neely, and I think Jim left, he explained to us that it was very interesting, and of course you and Senator Carter and Gordley were here when they started the welfare to work.
Exactly.
Oregon is the only one that's being selected to continue this research, and this call came to them like out of the clear blue, asking Oregon to do this. And I, you know, normally a federal agency doesn't just get on the phone and call a state, from the Department of Labor, to ask them to do this research and evaluation unless they're looking at some type of national rollout. And so that was kind of, it was kind of a bonus that they had not expected.
Madam Chair.
Senator Carter.
You've had discussion on this?
Yes, we've had discussion.
I move that a federal grant application request for employment retention and advancement be moved to the full committee with recommendation.
Senator Carter moves the federal grant application request, employment retention and advancement recommended to the full committee on ways and means. Is there any objection? Hearing none. Senator Bordier, would you like to carry?
Yes.
And welcome. We're now in work session with Department of Human Services, Health Services, Federal Grant Application, Genetics Program Capacity, Barry Cast. Hi, Barry. George isn't here, though. Where's George? Are you going to be George?
Yeah, I'll be George.
You'll be George. Pam's here. And Cindy's here. Cindy Jones is here. Welcome, Barry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Barry Cast, Assistant Director, Department of Human Services. And if you are waiting for me, I regret that. I was at the School of Social Work encouraging about-to-graduate social workers to stay with the profession and to be optimistic about the future of our society. So,
Which school?
Portland State.
Portland State. Well, that's for most
of them. School of Social Work.
Senator Gordley, I believe that they have the highest number of graduates in social work in the state, don't they, Barry?
I think it's the only graduate school of social work. We have some associate programs around the state. But
an excellent program.
And since that's where Senator Gordley's from, that's why. We get carried away back here on the school. Go ahead.
Madam Chair, thank you. We are here to request permission to apply for two grants, one to the Centers for Disease Control and the other to the Centers for Disease Control. The grant that we're discussing first, I believe, is the genetics and chronic disease application, and I think I may have mentioned earlier that the CDC has changed, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention have changed.
How much are you going to owe me today? Rosie.
I'm easy, whatever you decide is appropriate, Madam Chair.
Three CDCs.
The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has changed their approach to grant funding, grant applications, and they are putting them together in one package. This is part of a larger package that was due sometime earlier, and we sent you a letter a little bit late on the schedule, and I regret that as well. But I think the problems that we've had in terms of timing have been solved. This grant is offered to promote the integration of genetic concepts and the use of family history into health promotion and chronic disease prevention. It comes with up to 3 years of annual funding. The purpose of the project is to strengthen Oregon's public health capacity to address current and emerging genetic issues in chronic disease. And a lot of what we deal with in public health is developing a strategy to understand the patterns of illness, what causes them, what's heritable, and what is preventable, and using data to develop strategies to avoid illness and prevent death and disability. Donalda Dodson, who is the administrator of our Office of Family Health, has brought forward this proposal, and I've asked her to prepare to brief you on what the activities are and how the grant would be implemented. And then we're asking for a permission to apply. I'm not sure what the date is for hearing about this, but it shouldn't be too long, and we would then come back either to the legislature or to the emergency board for approval for budget and any position authority if needed.
Donalda.
Madam Chair, I'm Donalda Dodson, administrator for the Office of Family Health. This is really a kind of single-focused grant. It takes off from what we did a couple years ago in our genetics planning, and this is to have an individual, an epidemiologist, that can go and work with individual physicians, hospitals, to talk with those providers to help them see how they can incorporate genetic questions and concepts into their service as they give health services to individuals. It used to be that people thought genetics were the chronic one-time thing that would happen. You'd find an infant born with a frank birth defect. With this, we're trying to help people understand that in many of the chronic diseases, there can be a genetic component, and to help physicians and other care providers be able to incorporate that into their practice. And so this position that we have in this particular grant would be the individual that would do that. We also have some assistance with a training guide and doing some trainings with those individuals in a collective way. But it's helping them understand how genetics is a part of their ongoing practice, not a specialty.
Senator Carter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you tell me if this person will have, as a specialist, a specialty, a geneticist themselves to be able to do this?
Madam Chair, Senator Carter, our hope is to be able to recruit a maternal, a genetic epidemiologist, somebody with that kind of experience who could then be able to talk with the physicians. We've also added a little bit of our physician time because we know that physicians talk best with physicians, and so we've tried to build that in so that they would feel comfortable with this information coming to them.
Any questions?
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair.
Senator Carter.
I move that.
Well, we haven't had finished yet.
Oh, she hasn't finished. I'm
no,
sorry.
She hasn't finished. We have.
Pam.
Go ahead, Danelle.
I'm moving.
This grant would begin in July, should we be chosen to be able to receive it, for the 3 years with an option for a couple more years beyond that. So we anticipate that having 5 years to work with our individual care providers, get this to become a part of a standard of practice, then within that period of time, we would not have to have the specialty staff, and it could be incorporated in ongoing practice. So it would not have rollover costs after that period of time.
Danella, how many other states is this a competitive grant among other states?
This is a competitive grant among other states. Madam Chair, there are only 5 states that do not have birth defects registries, which we'll talk about later. But that also says that we're one of those states, so we're kind of a little slower in this area than some of the other states. So we're hoping that because of that, they may look favorable on our application.
What states are currently doing this type of a program, where they're trying to get doctors or they're working with doctors and the provider care community?
There are other, Madam Chair, other states such as Indiana, Washington, New Hampshire, Montana. The states that are not are like us would be Wyoming and Idaho, South Carolina, or South Dakota.
Barry, did you have a comment?
Just one comment, Madam Chair. It seems clear now, as we are seeing the impact of genetic testing on how we live in terms of law enforcement as well as in terms of health care, The legislature in the last session passed the Genetics Privacy Act to preserve the integrity of information. It just seems that we're at a point now where Oregon needs to come into this modern era of science and really grasp the role of genetics in healthcare and begin incorporating that in our prevention practices as well as our healthcare delivery. And I wanted to just say that years ago, before we knew that, for example, Down syndrome was a genetic illness, we were really lost there. And I remember my first case when I was in training social work school at CDRC, which is the Child Development and Rehabilitation Center at Oregon Health and Science University. The first case I had was a family that had a child with Down syndrome. And we, at that time, genetic testing for Down syndrome was beginning. I think we're going to see a revolution in healthcare as a result of these kinds of initiatives. We want Oregon to be there. This project will begin with diabetes and with hearing impairments that are heritable, and we'll move forward from there over the 5 years of the grant.
Pam?
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, I'm Pam Teschner with the Department of Administrative Services, and we recommend that you approve this request to apply for the grant.
Representative Smith?
You said this was a 3-year grant with an option to go to 5. I think maybe it needs to be made clear that you don't plan on returning to the state to apply for general funds in case you're turned down for this 2-year extension.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, no, it's our hope and it's our plan that this will become a standard of practice within the healthcare community, and that we would not need to do that any more than we do ongoing health promotion on other kinds of things. We're also planning to work with our chronic disease health promotion section within health services to see that they incorporate these concepts within their programs. So consequently, we'll have it covered from two areas.
Follow up. Did I say, it was a 30% match?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, that is an error. The 30% was the in-kind that we have said will be also working on this project, but there is no match required.
Oh, okay. You're just going to do it.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, yes, with just the funds that are available from the grant.
Okay.
Are you trying to be generous with the feds by telling them you have about 30% worth of in-kind that you're willing to offer?
Madam Chair, we're really trying to show them that we're working collaboratively with several different projects and how they all come together so that we have a system that we're developing in Oregon. Thank you.
I used to be in grants management, so I know that we do that in order to make our position a little at a higher level than other states.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gordley.
Yeah, I would just like to take note of some of the information supplied to us describing the nature of the request. It's the letter from the Department of Human Services dated May 7th. And at the bottom of the page, there's a description of the current epidemic of obesity in the United States and in Oregon. And the information just jumps out at me, I guess having my own personal challenges in that category. But on the record, I think it's important to say this, that the current epidemic of obesity, and again reading from the document, in the U.S. has hit Oregon particularly hard. Oregon has the highest prevalence of adult obesity of any state west of the Rockies. When combined with the percentage of adults who are overweight, 60% of Oregon adults are not at a healthy weight. Our youth follow closely behind, with 28% of 8th graders and 21% of 11th graders currently overweight. That is a challenge, a huge challenge for most certainly for this agency, but for all of us to deal with.
Senator Gordley and might want to also point out that some of the diseases that manifest itself from this particular problem, like diabetes and others, that also has a huge implication as we wrestle with the Oregon Health Plan budget. I'm mindful that if we don't begin to do something in a more preventive on some of these issues that we're talking about, huge medical costs later. Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Continuing the information, even most alarming to me is the period of time, 7 years, from 1994 to 2001, indicating that Oregon had an increase of 59% in obesity and diabetes increasing 62%. Now, I have to just question those numbers and where they come from, because if, in fact, that is true, we've got just an incredible problem facing us.
Madam Chair, Senator Morris, we do indeed have a problem, and it's not Oregon alone. The Centers for Disease Control has a site where you can see the increase in obesity for both youngsters and adults from 1990 to 2000, and it is alarming that the number of states with these large percentages of obese people has increased, and it has something to do with diet, physical activity, the way we live these days, but that's a topic for another grant application that we would like to make. It is not the subject of the genetics grant, but we would like to have a chance to talk with you further about what we think we might be able to accomplish in that arena. But it is not on today's schedule, but it is an important problem. And we get the information from health data and from survey data, from the behavior risk factor survey that we do every 2 years, I believe.
Every year.
And it provides a good deal of information about what people eat, what kinds of risks they take in life, how much they weigh, what their behavioral risk factors are. It's a very important part of the public health database.
Senator Morris, any follow-up?
I'm just at a loss. Those are horrible statistics.
When was last month, not too long ago, when I went back to the health conference in Philadelphia? And at that conference, they pointed out the increase in the incidence of obesity and what was occurring in this country, and its implications for particularly with racial and ethnic minorities with diabetes and hypertension and some of the other diseases. And it's very alarming that we do really need to begin to concentrate on this particular issue. And I think we're all just startled by the numbers. I know back there I was startled by the numbers when we were at that conference and saying, well, how did this suddenly just happen? That suddenly these are just numbers that none of us would have ever thought about. And then the minority communities, diabetes is, if you look at those stats, you're going, gosh, I wonder how people are even walking around at Center Morris.
Well, I just comment personally, having watched my sister battled diabetes her entire life and eventually succumbing to the disease. If this is compounding, I guess the question would be, you know, is this kind of an outlier statistic, or is this something that's compounding itself as a function of obesity? There are huge implications for medical care and the workplace with these statistics, if in fact they do continue.
I think we'd all agree. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Chair Winters. Not to beat this horse any further, but I think the core issue is the obesity, and that diabetes is a result of the obesity. I have a son who is diabetic, and so I'm very aware of this issue. And if I had a dollar right now in my wallet, I'd put it up here and say within 15 years there will be a cure for diabetes. But we truly need to get our arms around the weight issue in this state and in this country, because from my perspective, that's one of the greatest drivers of the increase in health care costs. I know in our family, it's really opened our eyes in the last 6 months since this issue has come upon us.
Any further questions? Cindy.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, LFO recommends approval of the request with the understanding that if the grant's awarded, DHS will come back to get position authority and federal funds expenditure limitation to the emergency board.
Representative Smith moves.
Yes, I do, Madam Chair.
Representative Smith moves the federal grant application request for genetic program capacity be presented to full Ways and Means with the due approved recommendation. Is there any objection? So approved. Smith on the
Me Smith.
T Smith on the House, and who would like to carry it over in the Senate?
I'd be happy to.
Yeah, I can.
Oh,
I'll let Susan of course.
Well, I would be pleased to.
Madam Chair, I would just request that as this request is presented to full Ways and Means, that we that we're all, let's be sure to put on record what we discovered about the prevalence of the problem and the challenges that faces in the future.
You betcha.
That, and that this committee is unanimous in its support of this particular issue, and that, you know, this committee really is concerned about the implications for both obesity and its effect on our population. I mean, diabetes was mentioned here, but I also know that hypertension and cardiovascular diseases and some of the others are also high up there when we begin to do an analysis. And so I think we can probably learn an awful lot from the geneticists and how much of it really is truly linked to genes. But there is. Mm-hmm. So I think this one is one that I think we all agree on. And Senator Carter, would you like to vote on the, you weren't here, on the genetic
support,
program capacity?
Support.
And your vote is?
Yes.
Yes. So it is unanimous by this committee. We're now into work session on Department of Human Services, Health Services, federal grant application request and population birth defects. Barry Cass and George is back. He's sitting out there in the audience.
Yes, George is back.
And Danelda. This one was before us several weeks ago, and it is back. We had some questions that we asked the department to respond to. And so with that, Barry and Danelda, it's your show.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This may sound like an echo from the past, and it is indeed. We would like to present this grant in a more complete form and help you understand what it is that this grant would accomplish. We're trying to develop and implement what is referred to as a state birth defect surveillance system. I wanted to say something about the term surveillance because it does sound in these times kind of frightening. But a lot of what we do in public health is gather information, understand patterns, watch for trends, and make decisions based on that about intervention. This grant is really focused on establishing a database that will help us make better decisions about birth defects and hopefully prevent them in the future. And to give you a better idea of how this grant will work, I've asked Danelda Dodson to prepare that and to walk through the grant with you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I think it would be good if I could just put it in context. We just talked about the genomics of the genetics. That one, we were talking about how to work with healthcare providers to be cognizant of that entity and to be able to screen and ask appropriate questions to their clients or their patients. This birth defects surveillance program is the next step to say, okay, once you identify an individual that has a birth defect, then we would like that to be reported to us in a registry so that then we can use that information, as Barry has said, to look at trends over time, to look and see what is occurring in our state. And this registry would do that. The FTE that's identified or the support that's identified within this grant application would be to work with physicians, hospitals, birthing centers to say, when you identify somebody with a birth defect, report them to us so that we can then see that the appropriate follow-up is done, that those families receive the services that they need, and that then we can identify what is happening in that area within our state. We've identified that we'd like to look at folic acid, so that would be neural tube defects, you know, infants that are born with spina bifida, that type, so we can get a better idea of what the incidence is in our state. We want to look at alcohol consumption to see if we're seeing any effects from alcohol and what the prevalence of that might be in our state. We're not alone. Many states are trying to figure out what is the incidence and what is the impact on our society. So this birth defects registry would allow us to be working with those providers to report those entities so that we can get a better idea of the incidence of birth defects in our state. And the birth defect is anything that happened in utero. So it may be that you can see that when the baby is born, but as Representative Bates said last time, sometimes those may not materialize till much later on in life. With the effects of alcohol, sometimes that doesn't materialize in a child until around 9 or 10, and you start seeing some impact of their development on the way they socialize in the community. We want to be able to obtain that information, help providers see, you know, if you have a child acting out, let's look back at the history. Could this possibly be a birth defect that could be reported to the birth defect registry so we get a better handle on what is happening in our state?
Question? Representative Smith.
I have a couple of questions I'm concerned about. Number one is, how are you going to use this birth defects registry? Who will have access to it? I imagine the federal government would, since they're funding it. And then how will they use it? And is it private information?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, the information would go into a current data system that we're developing called FamilyNet, and we have a family and child module in that where we collect information. It would be in a data warehouse. So in a data warehouse means that the data goes in, it's de-identified so that you get an accumulative number, and we would be able to report to the federal government that we had 20 cases of X or 10, but not by individual. And in fact, in our data system development, we have been very conscious of saying that we need to be careful of confidentiality, security of the data, being sure that only individuals that have a reason to have access to that information have clearance for that, and that if information is passed from one entity to another, it has to be with parental consent.
I would just like to go on record as saying I hope those safeguards are in fact in place, and this is not information that it can be used at a later date for a detrimental purpose if it gets into the wrong hands. I'm really kind of sensitive about that issue. We had this discussion, and as Senator Gordon remember, in our education committee on a similar thing regarding students.
Yes.
And we, you know, that really needs to be protected. The safeguards need to be in place. Another follow-up question. Says here in the narrative, you're going to be tracking common birth defects. How do you define common birth defects?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, the common birth defects would be like cleft lip and palate, the spina bifida. Right now, we also want to look at fetal alcohol spectrum, because we think that might be more common than what we know. So it's our self-identification of what the common would be.
Okay, you have a list?
We have a list that we proposed within the grant.
I see. Okay.
Any additional questions? Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. How does this integrate into HIPAA?
Madam Chair, Senator Morris.
Excuse me.
Okay. And very four times the CDC Boy, you got Frank on that, and I've never seen him like
that. I didn't catch myself with that. Rosie likes you today.
Yes. Madam Chair, Senator Morris. I believe it had to do with how does this relate to the Health Insurance Portability Accountability Act. We are very familiar with that, and in fact, we're being sure that as we develop the data systems and develop our data warehouses, that we apply the rules that we know we have to have with that as we develop those. That's why we have the security issues, the confidentiality issues. We have those controls on the data system. Within this, that we go into a data warehouse where information would be de-identified and we just get accumulative numbers of incidents. But then that would allow us to be able to then use this in program planning. That is also why we've identified that if a client wants this information shared with anyone else, they must give consent so that we're assured that we're meeting the letter of that act.
Donelda, you may want to explain what de-identified means.
Excuse me. Madam Chair, de-identified means that we'll take certain certain things for this client, like the birth date, the name, and we'll put them into this data warehouse and say these clients had spina bifida, and then we'll take away the names and we'll take away the birth dates and we'll just have this incident number here.
It's sort of like if you wanted, if you were doing research through a medical school and you wanted to sort everything that is related to spina bifida, you could sort that out. You know, without knowing who the individuals were. The same would be true if you wanted, if you were doing research on tonsillectomies. It would sort tonsillectomies and give you that information and those profiles without name.
And Madam Chair, we've also are very sensitive to small numbers, and so we have rules that, you know, if somebody said from Baker and they wanted to know how many incidents of a fetal alcohol spectrum disease, we'd say, well, if it was less than a certain number, we would not report that out because of small communities, there is a tendency to be able to know who everybody is. So we have those safeguards built in also.
Hi, George.
Hello, Madam Chair. For the record, George Naughton with the Department of Administrative Services. We are recommending that you approve this request.
Cindy.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, LFO recommends the approved request with the understanding that if the agency will come back for position authority and federal funds expenditure limitation at a future meeting of the emergency board.
If I ask a question for me.
You may certainly, Senator Carter.
Now, can you tell me where George has been?
George, the member would like to know where you've been. They missed you.
Madam Chair, Senator Carter, I was getting a briefing with our attorneys on the Medicaid upper payment.
Oh, don't talk about it.
So, rather not go any farther, please.
Oh. And you notice that he didn't give the acronym.
No,
Medicaid upper limit payments. Okay.
You should get a good thing from him today.
Madam Chair, I would like to move that the Department of Human Services, Health Services, application grants for population-based birth defects be accepted and moved to the full committee on Ways and Means. Senator Carter moves the Department of Human Services federal grant application request with a due recommendation to full Ways and Means on the population-based birth defects. Is there any objection? Hearing none, approved. Who hasn't carried?
Frank,
yeah, no, Frank did.
He did.
So I'll do Senate. Who wants to carry House?
I can do that.
Okay.
Look at him. He's trying to make the noise so you can see he spent his money on.
and I do hope, George, that we had good news today.
Madam Chair, I don't know if I would say that completely. We talked with the attorneys about how they want to proceed, and hopefully we can reach some kind of settlement agreement with the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services, and I really can't go any farther than that right now.
With we will be back tomorrow, and what are we hearing tomorrow?
I don't have the schedule for any manager.
But just be here
Children
tomorrow.
Children and Family Services. Children. Are we still continuing with that?
We're continuing that.
Yeah.
I have some special
work tomorrow.
We'll have committee tomorrow. And it should hopefully, sure. It'll be on your desk tonight.
With that, we are adjourned for tomorrow.